When you see something offensive on the internet, a video, a picture, and you hit report, that content, it actually goes to a person. A cleaner.
Workers working for Facebook, he or she has to say, I work for the Honey Badger Project. This is strange. This sounds like a script of a Hollywood movie.
This week on Download This Show, the people that sit there and watch some of the worst, most traumatic content on the internet, what goes on in their lives? As you scroll through your feeds, following friends and stories on Facebook, have you ever wondered how social media platforms work out what images or topics are deemed okay and which ones are deemed as not okay? It's not just algorithms making the decisions. There's also people as well. They're known as content moderators or cleaners who delete or rate thousands of extreme images, videos from political violence to never-ending streams of pornography. There's a new documentary that's about to be released in Australia that takes you behind the scenes of the internet cleaning trade. It takes you to an office in Manila and you get an insight into the lives of the Filipino workers who press delete for a living. And they're changing the way you see the world. But at the same time, it's their lives that are deeply affected. Hans Block is the co-director of The Cleaners and he joins us right now from Berlin. Hans, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting us.
So I'm curious about the starting point for this. What got you interested in the world of these cleaners? Was it the political heat that some of these social media companies are getting in the US about how content is moderated? Where does it start for you?
So the starting point of our research was actually a cruel post on Facebook. Five years ago, thousands of users around the world discovered in their Facebook newsfeed a video from a small girl being raped by an older man. And before the video was deleted from Facebook, it had been shared 16,000 times and liked 4,000 times. And we asked ourselves, why is that happening? Because material like this is online in the World Wide Web, we know that, but not very often on social network sites. And so we start researching, is there someone who's filtering the web? Is there something like an artificial intelligence or an algorithm doing that job? And then we got in contact with a media scientist, Sarah T. Roberts, and she's an expert for content moderation, and she told us, no, they're humans behind these decisions.
Introduce us to these people. Exactly who are they that are doing this moderating?
So the moderating is being outsourced to the developing countries. So in the case of our film, we researched in Manila. And there are thousands of young Filipinos sitting in front of a screen every day, 8 to 10 hours, and reviewing all the cruel stuff which we are not supposed to see on the social network sites. So, and this outsourcing is in a way a very complicated process, but because first the workers are just getting paid $1 to $3 per hour, which is not that much for a very, very complicated work. And on the other hand, we don't know who is the decision maker behind the digital public world, because what appears in the digital world is very important nowadays.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that emerges quite clear to me. So these people don't necessarily work directly for Facebook or YouTube. They work for third-party contractors, and they often come with quite stringent contracts as well. I'm wondering if you could kind of expound upon what are the limitations on them as employees?
So this is a very, very secretive industry. When we first researched in Manila, we experienced a very, very high security level. On the one hand, this is a very extreme, full, stressful work. And on the other hand, they have to use code words, for example. Whenever a worker is working for Facebook, he or she has to say, I work for the Honey Badger Project. This is strange. This sounds like a script of a Hollywood movie. And there are some people signing, or all of them signing, non-disclosure agreements. They are not allowed to talk about their work with other people, with their friends, with their families.
Which begs a question. Why did they feel the need to communicate to you? What was the impetus for them?
Most of the content moderators are kind of proud of what they are doing every day. They're cleaning up the sins from the whole world. They have such an important task to do for all users of the social network, and they are proud of that.
Mm. And I guess the cleaning up the sins is a fascinating concept, because I think one of the underlying elements here is that Manila, the Philippines, has a huge Catholic component to it, and quite a few, there's one woman in particular that's quite conservative in her worldview, and I'm sort of fascinated by that, right? Because you've got these cleaners from one particular part of the world that has a particular worldview that are that have a tremendous power, actually, to define what the rest of the world sees. And I'm curious about how you see that intersection between Philippines culture having this quite wide-reaching impact across the rest of the world.
Absolutely. That was one of the questions we asked ourselves. Why Manila? Why we often wondered why Manila is actually the capital of content moderation. And of course, there's one obvious reason that the Philippines is a low-wage country. But besides that, there are other reasons. And for example, as you named it, this is the religion. More than 90% of the Philippines are Christians. And when they moderate the social network sites, they do it like a Christian mission. So they try to get rid of the sins of the world. They sacrifice themselves for the sinners. That's what they told us. And there's one another reason. That's the ideological framework for the moderators to appeal. For a while, a new president has been in office, Rodrigo Duterte, and he stands for cleaning up society, social cleansing. By that, he means that all criminals or drug addicts should be made invisible. Mm. And in reality, that means that 10,000 people have been killed there. All problems are simply made invisible instead of resolving them. And one of the moderators told us he's doing actually the same than Duterte is doing for the real world. He's cleaning up everything which is inappropriate.
It's fascinating. I mean, one of the women that you interviewed, she described herself as an innocent before starting the job. And by the time you progress through the film, she says she ends up dreaming endlessly of penises, which sounds funny, obviously, but there is a traumatic element to this, to sit there and watch beheadings and rapings and some of the worst behavior in the world. I'm curious, is there training? Is there psychological support for these workers?
No, not really. The training is like a training crash course, 3 to 5 days. They sign in contracts and they don't know what they're working at the end. And then they find out in the training what is the work about, to screen like torture, child pornography, terrorist attacks, and so on. And most of them are really overwhelmed, and there's actually no psychological support. The only support we heard about is something like that there's a so-called psychologist, and they are meeting quarterly in a big room with all the teammates together, and then the psychologist asks the question, is there someone with a problem?
Right.
And no one answered the question because everybody is afraid to lose the job.
And just so people can wrap their heads around this, how many images and videos is an average moderator working through in a shift here?
So one of the protagonists of our film told us that he's actually doing the moderation very fast, and he hits like 25,000 images every day. Yeah. Imagine that amount of images which you have to review.
And what's the process? Let's just take the Honey Badger, Facebook as an example. What is the process that has gone through before it arrived to the moderator? What's had to happen at that point?
So there are two channels how the material or how the content is coming to the Philippines. The first one is that we as the user have the possibility to report content whenever we think it's not appropriate to post, things like that. And the other channel is that an artificial intelligence is also marking suspicious content. So whenever the machine is thinking, okay, this might be the shape of a sexual organ or this might be blood, the machine will flag the content and will send it to the Philippines. And the content moderators there have to double check if the machine or if the user was right.
And is the Philippines the center of this, or are there other centers of cleaners in other parts of the world as well?
So there are other spots for content moderation as well, for example, here in Berlin or in Warsaw or in Lisbon or in Dublin. But Manila is by far the biggest spot for content moderation nowadays.
And so what I'm curious about here is where the grey areas are. Like, obviously, we understand that beheadings and things like that are, you know, they're going to get nixed. But as you spent time sitting with them, where do you personally, as an internet user, where do you find the grey areas are where these people are making decisions that maybe don't reflect the sort of the usership of those services?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the problem, that there's no responsibility for this decision-making process. Because imagine you're like an 18, 19-year-old Filipino working as a content moderator and getting content from all over the world, from from users fighting against democracy from war zones like Syria. And you have to distinguish who's a freedom fighter and who's a terrorist. You've been confronted to a lot of ambitious, very complicated, complex material, and you have to decide within seconds. Many of the people in the Philippines told us that they're really overwhelmed to make those decisions. And at the end, there's just the gut feeling helps them out to decide. And that's really problematic because Facebook and others becoming more or less the biggest infrastructure for communication information nowadays. It's like our digital public sphere. And it's very important what appears there and what not.
And do they arm them I'm thinking of things like satire and political expression as well. Do they arm them with any understanding of history and culture that can sometimes, you know, a lot of this stuff comes with baggage? Are they given any sort of support to navigate that?
No, also not really. They have a training material. It's like hundreds of pages with hundreds of rules, and then they have to learn all these rules, and then they have to decide. And whenever Facebook is talking about the community standards, they try to make sure that these are objective rules. But who is executing those rules? These are people, and every people have a specific cultural background, a specific social background. And it's not easy to decide, or it's not easy to decide for one rule or for another rule. There was one very funny example in our film when an American artist, Ilmar Gore, painted Donald Trump in a nude with a very small penis. And one of the contest moderators told us he would delete this image because you're making fun of a president. And that's because in the Philippines, you're not able or you're not allowed to criticize your president or authorities, which is completely different to Europe or to the States.
I'm curious, given the enormous political pressure at the moment on Facebook, especially in the United States after the 2016 election of Donald Trump, do you think Silicon Valley's approach to social media moderation is going to have to change?
I hope so. I don't know if you heard about the law case, the lawsuit, which I've heard about yesterday, that one of the moderators from California sued Facebook for having it post-traumatic stress disorder because she was also doing content moderation in the States. And there's much more pressure from journalists and from the public. And I hope that this moderation process will change in the future. But at the end, what Facebook, when they have been in front of the hearing Congress in the States, told is that they want to hire 20,000 people until the end of this year for moderation. But it's not just the quantity. It's also the quality. Who is deciding what we can see and what not? And that's really what we have to talk about.
And just lastly, before I let you go, has it changed the way you use the internet? Do you see the internet differently now that you know that there's this subterranean industry of moderators?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, whenever I post something on Facebook, I really thinking about the content moderators. And there was also one funny anecdote when the production company of our film posted the trailer of our film. Actually, the trailer was deleted from YouTube.
Why? Under what terms?
Yeah, and that's really funny. Or I mean, it's tragic as well, because a film about the very rough working conditions from content moderators was deleted by a content moderator somewhere in the world.
Did they ever put up a reason?
No reason at all. We asked YouTube and Google, we asked them, and there was no response at all. So this is the way it goes nowadays. There's a big intransparency to talk about mistakes, to talk about underlying problems, and hopefully that changes in the future.
Hans Block, joining us from Berlin. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for the interview.